Let's face it, not all church marketing is created equal. And in fact, there's a lot of mistakes that I see many churches still making here in 2025. In this conversation, we're going to unpack seven of them. Let's do this. You're listening to the Reach Right Podcast, the show dedicated to helping your church reach more people and grow. Well, hey guys, I'm Thomas.
And I'm Ian.
And today we're talking about the seven most overrated church marketing tricks and what you should be doing instead of those overrated tricks. So we'll get into it. Should be a good conversation. This is what we talk about here. Yeah. We eat, breathe, and sleep church marketing and what's working and what isn't, Ian. So
yeah,
looking forward to talking about some of these things. I will say that some of these things on the list are things that we probably, even in previous episodes of the podcast, at some point probably recommended because we've been doing this podcast for a while, five years now, right?
So that's right. That's right.
Things change in marketing. So if you're going back and we don't delete our old episodes. So,
even though we probably should have a couple of them.
Maybe. Yeah, probably.
We've come a long way. Put it that way.
We have. So
still much room to improve. Yeah.
Room to improve, and I think this is something to take with a grain of salt. These things do change all the time, but this is the best advice we know how to give churches here in 2025. So let's get into it. What should we? What should churches be avoiding because it's overrated, Ian?
Yeah. So first one here is sending mass mailers to every person in town.
Yeah. When you and I started in church marketing, this was the Cadillac of church marketing.
It was
sending out mass mailers. I don't even remember the name of it. So it was Outreach.com or Outreach Marketing. They were big. And who was the one? There was another one we always heard about.
Man, you would ask that. I can't remember.
Yeah, there was, but like it was constant. Like, so we were helping churches with websites primarily back then. And people would say things like, well, I'm not going to do a website. We're doing a mailer.
Like that was the that's right. That was the main competition of websites back then. Yeah,
right. So, yeah, and that's so nuts to even think about right now that someone would think that I don't need to have a website. I'm going to do a mailer instead. So, is it completely like coffin closed under 6 feet of dirt, totally dead? Maybe not. I think you could still make a case for it. The primary way that people do it now is what you'd call like every door direct mail from the United States Postal Service here in the U.S. at least. There are things that made it make sense for, there was like nonprofit rates for mailing back in the day where you could send these things out. But it's so complicated. And here's the big thing is that like you don't have any measurement ability. Like that's what's really hard with this. And all modern marketing, what's so great about it is you can see exactly like what you're able to, like what your results are. I could see how many people saw my ad and how many people of them clicked on my ad and how many of them actually took a step when they were on our website. And there's so many advantages there. And then the great thing about modern methods is that you can actually get much more specific and reach the people that your church is best able to accommodate when you send out this kind of marketing. So now this might rub some people the wrong way because when people say like, you know, well, isn't the church for everybody? Shouldn't everybody be welcome at our church? Obviously, everybody is welcome at your church, but you just have to wrestle with the fact that you are probably not the best church for everybody in your city.
Yeah.
So case in point, you're pastoring in Los Angeles. You are an English speaking congregation and you probably are not the best church for someone that only speaks Spanish, right?
Right.
There's probably people in your community that only speak Spanish and they should probably go to a Spanish speaking church because that's just the community. That's where they're best able to hear the gospel. So a direct mail campaign would not let you say, give it to only people that speak English because it has to go to every single door. Instead, if you advertised on Meta or on TikTok, you can get specific on saying, I want to only target English speakers.
Right.
Or if you're best able to reach young families, you can do ads for young families. And you can target specific audiences for specific events or ads. So let's say you have a big harvest party or Halloween party you do at your church. Well, it's not really made for people that are in their 70s, or it's not as attractive to someone that is a 19-year-old to come to your harvest party where there's kiddie games and you can bop for apples and stuff, right?
Correct.
So What it is good for is for young families. And so you can target specifically right. moms of preschoolers and elementary age kids. And that's who you're sending your ad to. So, so right. much more granular in the targeting. It makes so much more sense. So unless you're have already fully maxed out that side of things on social media ads and stuff like that, I would steer clear of spending money on kind of mass mailings for your church there.
I don't know. We had a first-time visitor last week, Thomas. He came for the first time, and he had the mailer in his hand when he walked in. I'm kidding. No, he didn't. That didn't happen. So anyway, totally agree. Next one would be relying too heavily on church signage.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm not against church signage. I think church signage is actually... It's something you should have if you have a physical building. What we deal with in Hawaii is with astronomical real estate prices, almost every evangelical church does not have their own building here.
Right.
We typically meet in public schools and rented facilities where we cannot have permanent signage put up. But that doesn't stop us from every single week on Saturday, we're putting out signs in some key intersections and those kinds of things that are in our community to let people know about it. So so I want you to hear this. I definitely believe in church signage. Right. What I don't believe in is exclusively using church signage as even your primary method of marketing because it really is dependent on people's driving patterns and that kind of stuff, whether they're going to be visible to them or not. I do think it's something you should invest in. I think like LED signage is really great too. You can do some really cool things with that and announcing kind of community events. So I love it. But I just think the warning here is if you think that that's enough, I think you're missing huge opportunities. And so what should you do instead? Yeah. I think things like social media, I think a modern version of the signage is like using the Google Grant. For people that are looking for churches, the Google Grant, if you don't know, it's $10,000 every month that churches can claim to spend on the Google ad platform. So, and what Google that does is not just targeting everybody. Again, this is the great thing about digital marketing is it helps you target people that are actually looking for things that your church offers, like church services or youth ministries or divorce care programs or whatever you wind up doing at your church, you can advertise that on something like Google Grant and it's a great value.
Yeah. Be curious to hear from churches listening to this, how many people they reach from those witty sayings on their church sign that have the scripture references or something funny, you know, on there. I still see that a lot here in Texas, just driving and everything. And again, we're not against church signage, but we would say definitely.
The most famous one I feel like is there's like a taco shop, Arroyo or something, taco shop. Is that what it is?
I see
so many memes, and I think that's in Austin there somewhere, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that, on 5th Street in
Austin. Is that what it is?
Yep.
But they always have something funny. But like, so basically church signs that have like, you know, funny sayings and stuff on them. I love it. But they're like just an old school version of memes. Like that's what that is. Right. It's a meme like that you have to drive by to see, which is still cool. I like it. It's attention grabbing. We've seen some pretty bad ones over the years, but
We won't get into those. Some of those came to mind actually, but next one would be overposting generic Bible verses on social media. My gosh, this when Facebook was born, didn't we see this all the time? I think most certainly is dead.
It is. Well,
yes.
So. It is dead. I want to clarify, the Bible verses are not what we're referring to as generic.
Bible verses
are still powerful,
but
the generic graphic scripture verses, those kinds of things.
Right.
Okay. So they had their heyday. They were the best that you could possibly do for about four years, but that was... realistically, that was all pre-pandemic. That was even before that. I think that probably ended around 2017 or so.
Even before,
It's been a while now. So if you're still doing it, it's not a matter of it like necessarily hurting you. It's just you're kind of wasting your time because an individual sermon, an individual graphic with a scripture on it, as pretty as that graphic may be designed, will have very limited reach in the modern social media algorithms. So Instagram will not push it. Facebook won't push it. And then all the other ones are all video based. So what to do instead? post video, post reels, post YouTube shorts, post
stories,
TikToks, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Do that. Put them on your stories as well. But you know, you could chop up your sermon clips. We actually just did a video about things you can do instead of like just doing generic sermon videos. You could do even better things. So I'll link to that right up here. But yeah, so I think the days of sermon graphics are done. It's probably not worth your time, and the juice isn't worth the squeeze anymore.
Yeah, it used to work around the time when you'd always check in when you got somewhere and say, I remember when I last time at that, I checked in when I got to work. I mean, I'm not feeling well today, but I'm going to power through. Yeah, those types of posts back
then. Can
you
still check in? Does that still exist?
I think it does, but it's like one of the many options, and it's definitely not front face. I don't know. That's because I haven't done
but
it.
You're the age that uses Facebook a lot, I know, Ian. So it's like, I think maybe you would know, but I guess not.
I actually am on Instagram, and I use YouTube more than anything. So thank you, Thomas. But anyway, this next one's kind of funny, but it's relevant and applicable. Trying to be cool instead of being real, or maybe another word is, you should be authentic and not just be trying to be the cool church. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think that this is something that people can see right through. Ian, I can say with all candor that this is me and you basically being ourselves. I might be a little bit like more up or something than I would normally be when we do these podcast episodes.
Yeah.
But this is us. I make fun of you for being older than me, like I just did. You know, that kind of stuff.
That's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the kind of stuff we do. And so I think we have found that when we like, even if we don't have a ton of polish on things,
right?
If we're able to just be our authentic selves, people value that. So what do you do instead? Be authentic. Don't get into like the posting paralysis of feeling like, unless I really curate this to be perfect, that it's probably not worth posting. I'm seeing this grow even more now. I'm all for, you know, good production value. We have video editors and people that make us look, especially on our produced videos. These podcasts have very little editing, but, you know, but on our produced videos, and we have shorts that we do, that we have full-time video editors that help us with this kind of stuff. So we're all for polishing, but I think just being yourself is the most valuable asset that you have. So something you should probably lean into.
Yeah. And people, again, they value authenticity. They want to see real people like themselves and not everyone just being polished. And you're right, people see through that these days. So the other one is, don't just only focus on Sunday morning attendance.
Yeah. I think for this one, I think that is the front door for most people to a church, right? The first thing you'll do is you'll probably get on the website of a church, and then you'll probably walk in to the doors during your main worship service. There's other stories, people getting involved with a life group first, or someone coming to some kind of a big church event. But I'd say, this is kind of me spitballing. Yeah. My guess is something like 80% of people, that's their first encounter is on a Sunday morning. So I think what we're getting at with this is that like, especially when it comes to your posting and your marketing and things you're doing out there, is don't just push come on Sunday, because that doesn't work. Like, especially with social media posting, if all of your things are like graphics that say, hey, you know, we're going to be talking about this on Sunday, you want to not miss it. Like, don't use social media that way. It's better to tell stories about what has happened or is happening than it is to talk about what is going to happen. So if everything is just invitational, I think you miss the opportunity there. It's even better. And I think people catch the invitation if you talk about the things that are happening there. So if you had baptisms this Sunday, I think a more valuable post on social media is right after the baptisms happen, having photography and video of people coming up out of the water and being embraced by their loved ones and raising their arms because they just made this decision. And that is a great post celebrating what's happening, as opposed to a video of, whether it's a well-produced video or not, of pastor talking about it, saying, hey, you won't want to miss this Sunday, we're having baptisms, come on out. Like, that's the mistake that we make with that there. So it is the front door, but you have to remember that it's better caught than it is taught. You have to invite people with like kind of what's like, what have people that have gone before you experienced is the kind of thing you're trying to communicate there.
Better caught than taught. I like that. That's often that's authenticity too in action. So this next one, we'll probably use a little explanation. Copying mega churches without context.
So I think a lot of churches do this. Like, so we just kind of figure that, you know, they have 50 people on their staff, so they probably know what they're doing. So we ought to do this. And what I have learned is that what works for mega churches almost always doesn't work as well for smaller churches.
Yeah.
Number one, you get just caught up in comparison type things, and that's just not healthy. And like, so I know so many people, like, you know, Ian, what do you hear when you're, when someone calls us because they're looking to do a new website for their church, who do they say they want their website to look like?
Oh goodness. Elevation. That's
Elevation
the one.
Church.
I'm
right.
So less now, thankfully. But, for, I'd still hear it quite a bit. So,
Elevation Church has an amazing website. Now,
yes, they do.
They probably have about $3 million invested in that website. So most churches don't have that kind of budget.
Right.
I've looked at the depth of the programming and stuff that's in there. It's amazing. Like, very good.
Yeah.
Most churches don't need that. Most churches aren't that. And you need to tell a different story. So you can't just copy what Elevation does on their social media, on their website, on those kinds of things, because it's not, you have a different strength. In fact, I think your authenticity is often the biggest strength that you have that a mega church like Stephen Furtick, I think what you will about him, I'm not here to offer any kind of opinion, but he cannot be, he's not being his fully authentic self. Like, I'm not, this isn't a rebuke of him. I'm not saying that he should be more authentic or anything. I'm just saying that you can't when your platform is like that, because you have too much to lose if you don't get everything exactly right. So so hear me right in this. It's not a rebuke of what he's doing or anything there, but we can be much more authentic in smaller churches because that's what people are looking for, what they're valuing. And it doesn't have to be quite as perfectly curated with things. So I know this as someone who has tried these things out, have copied mega churches. Here's one thing I did is that I always had a hard time. I pastored in Wisconsin for 6 years, and I had a hard time making the call on whether or not we should have services on snow days. If it was snowing out, like, I didn't know. I'm from Hawaii. I don't know how to make this decision on who can, when we should be driving to church or not. What I did is I instructed our team to copy the mega church. If they're canceling service, then we'll copy them and do the same thing. If they're not, then we'll just assume that they know what they're doing. So that's one place where I think it was okay. But other than that, I really dissuade it.
Yeah, and the other thing I would just add to that is that, you know, there's a reason why these churches have grown, and they have systems and processes, you know, that the church, any church can borrow, but you're right. It's not just doing it the way that they're doing it, everything, but you can, there's definitely always something to be gleaned, but definitely not copied for sure. So absolutely. So be authentic. Last but not least, don't ignore your church website. Speaking of Elevation websites. Yes.
Yeah. Last but not least, and certainly most obvious, I would say, don't ignore your church website. We see this happening all the time. Church websites, they get out of date. And I'll say this, like, just kind of as a rule of thumb, I'd say like 4 years, like that's the lifespan of a church website. I think technology—
Before you need a redesign, to be specific. Before you need to refresh it.
And I don't recommend necessarily starting over from scratch all the time. A lot of times you have good content on there. You want to make sure you keep. If you've done sermons, you want to make sure you don't lose them.
Right.
Because that's still like a really valuable asset that you have as a church. But a church website needs a refresh every 3 to 4 years, I would say. And you probably want to invest either finances or a lot of time in making sure that's really great. You need picture refreshes and that kind of stuff. And that's just because technology changes all the time. So one thing I'll mention too, we have a totally free website strategy review that we offer where we'll give you a rating on exactly where your church website stands. If it's great, we'll be the first one to let you know it's great. You got some more lifespan on this one here. If it needs improvement, we'll give you kind of marching orders on how to make those improvements. So please take advantage of that. It's totally free, no obligation at all with it. But so you can't ignore this. It is the front door. It is the way that people will first be introduced to your church. You only have one chance to make a first impression. So this is probably the absolute place to start and the worst place for you to ignore when it comes to church marketing.
Yep. And like we've said before, a lot of your other online marketing, most of it that you do will funnel people to your website. When people look for or Google churches in your city, Google and the search engines are looking to send that traffic to your website first and foremost. So still absolutely vital. So
yeah, that's good stuff. So, well, good. I hope this has been helpful to you. These are the kind of things we're seeing. Some of these, like I said before, we still recommended churches do a few years back, and now this is our thinking as of 2025. If it has been helpful to you, let us know. And also, if you have something that's working for your church well, or maybe a mistake that you're wondering if it's still working or not, drop us a comment down below. We try to respond to every one of those comments as quickly as we can. So thanks, guys, for being a part of the Reach Right family, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.